It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And I said, like, I get that now, but how was I supposed to know beforehand? And he says, sir, it's clearly not okay to put your feet in the tubs of popcorn before you purchase them. And that's when I actually fell over, because I had one in each, in two different tubs. So at that point, I just sort of crawled out, and anytime anybody even, like, looked at me, I just yelled to stop body shaming me, and then got in my car and left.
So what does it mean, clearly? It's clearly.
That's what I
mean,
thought.
Was there a sign?
No,
or?
That's my thing. I'm like, is it possible? Yeah, but I'm like, you know, that was not clearly listed. I certainly didn't sign anything when I went into the hardware store.
No.
So yeah, I don't know what his deal is, but I'm not shopping there until that kid quits.
I mean, honestly, it's not something I would do, but I don't see how it's clearly.
No. It's not everybody's cup of tea or tub of foot popcorn, as my people say.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, no, I'm Yelp is gonna hear about this. Today's weather is like almost open up the house weather. I can't decide, basically.
Yeah.
I think tomorrow we probably will, but I don't know that we will tonight. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that's basically ebony and ivory. I mean, without the talent or the diversity or the historical significance, but otherwise, I mean, it's
yeah,
pretty
otherwise exactly.
Similar.
Yep.
One of us is blind, and one of us is British. And it might be the same one, you don't know.
But we're just both really bad at it.
Yeah, very, very bad.
Yeah.
Sorry, I should up front.
Yeah.
It's a really bad ebony and ivory.
Yeah.
Got the talent, et cetera,
et cetera. I'm particularly bad at being blind.
Mm-hmm.
I drive and everything.
Yeah.
I need to work on that.
Maybe you're not the blind one.
Oh. Well, then I'm really bad at being British. Either way.
You might have. Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like I'm okay at being blind. I'm not great at being blind, but I feel like I'm okay at being blind.
You're probably really great at being British compared to me.
Yeah, I'm also so-so.
Okay.
Brit.
I'm bad at both of those things. Let's just be honest.
Yeah. I'm a better Brit than I'm an American. I'll put it that way. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 331.
Yes.
I think.
Even I knew this one. So, seems like more and more episodes start with me going,
yeah.
That's a sign this show's probably dying. Anyway, let me explain this to you for those of you who decided. 331, that's when I decide it's no longer a fad. That's when I buy in. Here's how the show works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its encapsulated servants, I'm not sure we mentioned that before, we're in capsules now.
Mm-hmm.
We look like giant cold medicine.
It's just safer that way.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Draw the note cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the show. And seriously, people, we need more things written in. Why has you forsaken us? Yeah. So what's it been this time of week? That sounds about right.
Just a week, yeah.
All right, how's your week been?
Well, let's see. We saw Moana.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen it?
I still have not. The urge to see a new Disney film nowadays just is not strong in me. I mean, I'm not opposed. I suspect I may see it at some point, but...
The voice acting is very good, and the animation seems ridiculously good to me for some reason. And I find this particular female protagonist to be the most capable and the most likable of all the ones I've ever seen before. Which doesn't completely redeem the film, but I just I'm just saying that this character is very well acted and very well animated and a very capable character, and there's no romance in it at all, so it just, I don't know, for some reason I just find this character the most likable.
Supposedly, until late in the initial development, she wasn't in it. It was just a movie about Maui.
Really?
Yeah. They changed it. I forget why exactly. I think there was a relatability issue with having that be the main character. I don't know. But
There's a lot of problems with it. As you know, I don't like musicals, but I can usually deal with music in an animated feature because somehow it seems okay because it's animated. This felt like I usually feel during musicals, where when the musical number starts, I'm like, why are they doing this? This song doesn't make any sense, or the lyrics seem forced to make this song fit here. Like, well, we have to have a song here, and so let's write these lyrics. It's just terrible.
The soundtrack does not seem to have gone as crazy as Frozen did. I was going to say, people like it, but I'm thinking about the people that I know that like it, and they're all children. So I'm like,
There was only one musical number I liked, and it was performed by a crab, voiced by Jermaine Clement.
Ooh.
That was really good.
That's a selling point right there.
It was excellent.
You had me at crab, and then I stayed around at Jermaine Clement.
Otherwise, it wasn't that great. But I did like the title character a lot. We also saw Split.
Oh.
Have you seen that?
No, I do not intend to see that.
Really?
I've hit a point in my life where that hews too closely to actual mental illness, and it feels uncomfortably exploitative. That to me doesn't... Movies do a shitty job with mental illness.
Yes,
entirely.
They do. Yes, they do.
But frequently, especially when it's like a horror or a thriller thing, it's just generic the crazies. And I can sort of live with that. This one was more specific, and I'm like, I know people who have dissociative disorder.
Sure.
And so it bothered
me. No, I don't blame you.
And also, you know, I've been burned by Shyamalama Ding Dong far too many times. I've heard his last couple, now that he's realizing he doesn't have to be serious, he just kind of needs to be fun. Apparently, The Visit and this one were better. But, yeah.
Well, this one, everywhere there was a bit of the film that was recognizably from him, those were the weakest parts. The worst and most distractingly bad parts of it were the ones...
Shyamalan-esque.
Yeah, were the ones where you could say, yep, that's him, all right. And the best ones really just had to do with, you know, the level of performance.
And McAvoy involved. Just chewing the hell out of
He did a good job. You got to give it to him.
And I want to, like, not be happy with him doing this, but I'm like, nobody turns down that role. Yeah. Like, there's too much to grip onto there.
But, I mean, you know, I think I had some of the same... I mean, I usually do actually have some of the same concerns you have when it comes to exploiting mental illness. Just like with Moana, there was a lot of cultural appropriation there that I didn't did not like. And but, I mean, his performance was very good, and it was hard not to admire it. The story was not great. I mean, it was just... I don't know, it was just typical stuff, but I see why some people thought it was good or liked it. I mean, there are things about it that I can't discuss, actually.
It's very B-movie horror film, like good old-fashioned.
I guess.
Don't think about it too hard.
There's
some scares, there's some weird crap. And
I guess so. I guess
that, that seems to be the vibe, and that's the same thing people got with The Visit, which I got to admit, when I finally went and I read the story on it, I'm like, that's The visit seemed pretty interesting.
I don't even remember anything about the visit. Who's in
that's
it?
That's because nobody was expecting it from it. They're like, oh, Shyamalan's making a thing, whatever. I don't think anybody's particularly in it.
Oh.
Two kids go to visit their grandparents who they've never met because they're estranged from their mother. And then the grandparents are weird in creepy ways and something's going on kind of thing. And then it goes from there. It's still Shyamalan, so there's still like twists and things. But
no, I don't think I've... I don't think I've even heard of that one. Seems like there was something else we saw, a show that I wanted to talk about because on Netflix maybe? Has Netflix had any shows?
Okja or whatever.
We saw that too, yeah. We saw that too.
I haven't seen that yet. It looks interesting though.
I didn't like it.
Huh? Trish, food there!
Didn't like Okja at all.
Welcome to our traditional delivery person interlude. Tonight's dinner is Zemeckis.
I mean, the young actress in it was very good, but overall it was... I'm not even sure I understand why it's... people are liking it.
People think the big monster thing looks cute. Like, literally all I know about it is it's got that big monster thing in it, and it looks cute. That's all I know.
I didn't think it was very good.
That's too bad. We
saw it. Well, maybe you'd like it. Here's what I will say about it. I think I know the reason I didn't like it. Because I'm not generally a fan of anime. Yeah. And this seemed like a live-action anime.
That could definitely do something.
But I think people who do like anime will like it. Unless they don't think anime translates well into live-action.
It's hard to say. I mean... the real answer is going to be when that Death Note movie comes out.
Yeah, I see, exactly. I mean, yeah, I don't know. But what the things I didn't like about it was the same things I usually don't like about anime. But other people do like those things. So maybe that's a thing, I don't know.
Yeah. Can we talk for a second about Dark Tower?
Okay.
You've seen the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with the books?
Not in the least.
I always planned to read them, but there were a few things in the way.
Okay.
First,
Idris Elba wasn't in it.
No, yeah. That's what I was missing.
That was the big thing.
First, they weren't done, and you know me.
Oh, right. Okay, sure.
So I had to wait for that.
Yeah.
And then I start looking into them, and there's a lot of them, and they're huge. And I'm like, I don't know. And
you're liable to really feel trapped into finishing them once you get started, so...
But, and then there's the usual answer for this kind of thing, which is Wikipedia. Sure. So one time I spent a morning or whatever, and I read the Wikipedia entries for the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
And as usual, I'm like, pretty cool story. If I had to read it in 50,000 pages, which I think might actually be an accurate number for the whole series, I don't know that I would be. But what's interesting to me now... is I sort of didn't bother to watch the trailer because I'm like, if people like it, I'll go see it because the stills and stuff, it looks pretty, so if people say it's good, I might. But I don't really care. But I finally ended up watching the trailer. I'm like, let's check it out. The plot doesn't seem to have anything to do with those books. Like, it seems like they took characters and setting info and, like, basically mythology from the series,
mm-hmm.
and just made a different story, because the trailer makes it look like there's Idris Elba, and he runs into this kid, and this kid is doing... I don't think there's any kid. Mm-hmm. Like, in the books, Idris Elba's character is the character, mm-hmm. and he ends up getting sidekicks and stuff, but not, like, a kid that looks like he escaped from a YA novel.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm like, we waited all this time, and we're finally doing it, and we're just sort of not... we're taking everything except, oh, wait, the story in the novels... That seems weird. So I just think that's odd. But okay, sorry. Go ahead. As you were saying. So you watched...
That was really all I had to say about that. But there seems like there was a show that this past weekend came out on Netflix, and we like totally binge-watched it like until 3 in the morning. But
there's recently been another season of Orange is the New Black. I don't know if you watched that.
We did watch that, but that's not...
The L Word apparently is getting a sequel series.
Oh, that's interesting. Shoot. it was something that my wife liked it quite a bit.
New season of Kimmy Schmidt?
No, we watched that. Which was good, by the way.
Oh.
They gave...
The few fans of that show that I know of, and I don't mean that other people say it sucks. I mean, I only know a few people who watched it, but they all like it. All the other ones I've heard did not think this is a good season.
Really?
Yeah.
Because they gave... I always forget names of characters. The guy that she lives with... they gave him a lot more to do, and I.
Well, yeah, because he's very popular, and one of the friends who watches it made us watch the Lemonade
right.
parody that he did.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, I don't watch Kimmy Schmidt, and I never saw Lemonade or listened to it, so I'm like, I'm a little out of my depth here, but it's cute.
Yeah.
Like,
no, that maybe they didn't like how much time they gave him in the show because they gave him a lot, but he was good. So
they love him. The people who I have spoken to seem to think that character behavior, the premise is getting stretched thin to the point that they don't, the character motivations don't make sense to them
anymore.
Oh,
well, I thought that happened in season two, honestly, so.
Like
they barely were able to take the whole mole woman thing through the first season.
Yeah.
And then the second season, he was like almost absent. It's like, why? The whole original premise is gone because they couldn't figure out that we've only got one season's worth of show with this premise.
Yes, well, they were saying the opposite, that it's like, yes, originally you'd be shocked by things, but eventually you'd stop being shocked
right,
all the time.
Right.
And still being shocked, at least that's what they seem to think.
Oh, I see. Well, I don't know. I guess I didn't really notice that so much. I guess I was too busy thinking that all of the stuff they were giving this other guy to do was so good.
Yeah.
Well, I thought, wow, this is
popular. I think like
this
that.
Is really neat what they're doing here. Although I, you know, I like that that comedian, that actress, and I obviously would like to see a lot of her in her own show.
I never remember her name. I always want to call her Erin because of The Office.
Yeah,
but,
I know.
Oh, I knew it for a while because there were a lot of interviews with her and stuff in between The Office and this, but I can't remember.
Boy, I wish I could remember that show because my wife really likes it, and we had a lot of fun just watching the whole thing in one big go. But I'll remember it later. How was your week?
I had a lot of ups and downs. It was fairly interesting, I think. I don't know. There's only a couple parts I want to specifically talk about. I want to talk a little about video games, and then I got a couple movies to talk about.
Okay.
So, where was I last in video games?
Talked about that Rapture movie game.
Yeah.
You talked about the Rapture
Dragon Quest Builders, which I kind of decided again I was sort of done with again, but
yeah,
I still like it.
And then you thought you might do Bloodborne, which
okay.
I noticed you did start playing.
No, yeah, okay. That this is where I want to pick up. So yeah, so I have a friend who's obsessed with Bloodborne. He's obsessed with the entire Dark Souls
series. Thing, yeah.
But he's really obsessed with Bloodborne. He really thinks I'd like it. He really wanted me to try it. And I did. I spent that whole weekend playing it.
Yeah.
We did not think this through. Because both of us, I believe, considered that there were going to be two outcomes. Either I was going to like it despite the difficulty, and that'd be cool, and I'd play it. Maybe not beat it, but I'd play it, you know. Or the difficulty would be more than I wouldn't like the game, and I'd be like, no, I don't like it, and it's hard and whatever, and then I just wouldn't play. What we didn't consider is that I would like the game, really like the game, and be unable to play it because of its difficulty. I played all weekend. I read guides online. I restarted once. I never made it to the first boss. I never saw the first boss in this game.
But you still liked it?
I liked what was, like, if it was not hard, I would have played the shit out of this game. The vibe, the mechanics, the story such as it was, the setting was all really cool. And I could see, like, what, like, because you'd go to places and see, like, what was going to, like, they'd mention these different factions and stuff that I hadn't gotten to yet, and things attached to that, and I'm like, oh, this is really awesome. But I can't play it. And so now, I left that experience that weekend really kind of sad and a little bit mad at my friend Like, that was the thing. I was just like, damn it. So now I basically know what I'm missing, but I still can't play it. Because it's just too damn hard. And then he's telling me, he's like, I had trouble in the beginning, too. I kind of had to put it away for a while and come back to it late. And I'm like, how come this was not mentioned earlier? But at this point, I'm just like, no, this is too... I need to be enjoying my video games.
Yeah, yeah.
At this point, my life is too damn short to not be enjoying my video games.
Well, I can't figure out what's so great about these things in the first place.
This game is very, very sort of Lovecraftian vibe.
Mm.
And, like, you wake up and you're in the city and you need... And it's this creepy city that is known for this church that makes special kinds of blood that will heal ailments and stuff like that. And you need this kind of blood. But there's a hunt going on and there's beasts around the town. And so everybody's got their doors closed. And you're a very no-named character. I mean, technically, you put a name in character generation, but it, like, never comes up. You're just this dark stranger in town. And it's very cool. It's very dark, but it's very cool. And there's just all the things are these super high peaked roofs and things. It's very, like, a cooler version of that village in that stupid Van Helsing movie. Like, it's all that vibe. And so many of the things you collect and stuff have this very sort of gross biologic and macabre vibe to it. Like they, you know, it has, like, loading screens. It has little things talking about different, like, things. There's one thing that's, like, the unborn fetus of a dead god that's, like, a thing you can have in your inventory that does certain things and stuff. It just had a very cool, creepy vibe.
Wow.
But it's just too fucking hard. Oh my god. And I was like, don't have time for that shit. So, Sunday night, I think? This Sunday night. Wait, no, it wouldn't have been Sunday. I guess it was probably, I don't know. Anyway, at a time before now, finally started up Assassin's Creed Syndicate. Oh, I'm home again. Controls that make sense. I don't want shit that's hard, that I have to be like a manual dexterity badass dude.
Yeah, yeah.
I want shit that takes a little pattern recognition, but otherwise is pretty easy, but looks like it's hard and makes you look like a badass. Assassin's Creed combat is great for that. And it's often very similar. They only tweak it a little bit for each game. This one, again, partially because of the setting, this is Victorian England.
Mm.
It's much more, combat is much more punch focused, so, like, a lot of the fights are just bam, 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 and I'm punching them in all these cool ways, and then I flip them over and stab them, and then they're dead. Mm. And I look so cool doing this. And so, yeah, it just felt like coming home. I was so happy. The only thing I'm not happy about with this new one is, turns out, Assassin's Creed Syndicate, despite the marketing campaign, which had this one dude in everything that I assumed was the main character. There's two main characters. They are twins, a brother and a sister. And you have to, like, alternate between them in places, and they have different skills. And, like, I don't want to keep track of the two of them. But other than that, it's really cool. And, it's Victorian London is the place I get to jump around and be fucking Batman this time. So
that's nice.
Very excited about that. So that's cool. Yeah, let's talk some movies here. I've seen two movies of note since last time. Although I also have started rewatching the new Mystery Science Theater Netflix season.
Oh.
I just like it. Now that I've gotten into, and I rewatched the first one again to see if I liked it better, now that, like, I had really sort of bought into the new crew and stuff like that. And I do. I couldn't tell you exactly what makes a good Mystery Science Theater movie.
Sure.
But I feel like that one was not that good of a movie for it. Certainly not for the first episode, but... anyway, yeah, so two movies I watched. Last night in the theater, we watched The Hero.
The Hero?
The Hero.
I don't think I've
heard of it. Yeah, no, most people haven't. Trish had shown me a trailer, and I'd sort of forgotten about it. And here's what we knew going in. Well, first of all, here's the big selling point. Main character, Sam Elliott.
Hmm.
Have you ever seen Sam Elliott as the lead in something?
Probably, but I can't remember.
He almost never is.
Yeah, almost never.
And then, of course, things get it had Laura Prepon in it. It had Kristen Ritter in it. And then, of course, the thing that really caught us, of course, I keep saying, of course, Nick Offerman.
Hmm.
And so we're like, okay, yeah. AV Club was sort of so-so on it. But I was like, eh, you know, whatever. We'll go see it. And it's not spectacular. But I'm liking it more and more as time goes on. And Trish and I are having a lot of conversations about it.
Hmm.
It is essentially the story of an old, somewhat accomplished actor late in his life. It doesn't have much of a lot. It's very much a character study sort of thing. It's basically him coming to terms with the fact that he has terminal cancer.
Mm.
But it's a really interesting character study, and mostly it's just amazing to watch Sam Elliott be the lead. And I mean, like, you get so much of his character from the parts where he's not saying lines versus the others. And it's a super mediocre script. In that, on its surface, you've seen this movie many times.
Sure, sure.
It's pretty trope-filled, you know, all of that kind of shit. But it's just really well-performed. Everybody's really good in it. Also, small cameo by comedian Ali Wong as herself, and comedian Cameron Esposito as herself. So that was fun. And I personally think, this is something I've been paying more attention to in recently, I think it's really well shot.
Mm.
It was very purposefully shot. And I thought it worked really well, and very much, I feel like somebody wrote this with Sam Elliott in mind. Like, it in a lot of ways, it sort of works as an analog of him.
Mm.
This is a little bit different. In this version, he's always sort of been a fairly successful actor, but he's mostly known for being the lead in one really successful Western 40 years ago.
Mm.
And so there's a lot of, like, he's not a washed-up actor, but he's also sort of, like, literally the opening moments are him doing voiceover for a barbecue sauce commercial. And it's really, and the whole thing is he does it, and the director in the booth is like, can you do it one more time? And he does it again. He's like, can you give me just a few more? And he's like, do you want me to change anything? He's like, no, just give me a few more. And he ends up doing it like 6 or 7 times with like no change at all. And you can just see the look in his face. Like he's not, like, he's dead inside. Just right off the bat. So it's interesting. Yeah, I guess I recommend, I mean, it's certainly not a problem to see it. Anybody can see it, it's fine. It's not going to be life-changing, but it is interesting. When Trish and I were talking about it today, I was like, you realize, going forward, movies about people dealing with their own mortality are going to relate better and better to us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm suddenly thinking, movies I saw years ago that were about that, maybe I should watch them again, maybe I'll like it more
maybe,
now. I don't know.
Maybe.
But yeah, so that was kind of fun. Interesting little footnote, in the movie he's divorced, but his ex-wife is in the movie. And his ex-wife is played by Sam Elliott's real-life actual wife.
Oh.
So that was kind of fun. It's a pretty small part, but like you can sort of see the chemistry there. And a very different role for Nick Offerman than usual, which kind of cracked me up.
He was in that movie with Keaton about McDonald's or whatever. He's in that.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, without his mustache.
Yeah, no, he can't have his mustache anymore.
Why?
Because we all fucked it up for him. Like, no, literally. Remember, Trish and I went to his book signing thing, and he was talking about it.
Yeah.
And people were talking about the mustache thing, and he's like, yeah, here's the problem. You guys made Ron Swanson so popular that if I have a mustache and I'm auditioning for something, the casting director is like, we don't want Ron Swanson in this part. He says, the story here that you guys think is such a big deal is character actor changes facial hair. Like, everybody's freaking out about it, but there's, like, nothing to... Yeah, and so he, like, pretty much every movie now, he doesn't have it, because everybody's like, no, then it just looks like Ron
Swanson.
Well,
I didn't even think that McDonald's thing was released yet, but it was released in January. I guess it didn't do that great.
Yeah, it kind of made us... I haven't heard people saying it was bad. I've just sort of disinterested.
Yeah, I want to see it, though. I didn't even know it was
curious.
Well, what was your other movie? I didn't mean to...
Well, the other... Okay, this gets weird.
I did remember the show. I'll talk about it when you're done.
The other movie is on Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
So people can go see it. I'm not in a position where I can recommend or not recommend. It's bizarre, but I think maybe brilliant. It's a movie called The Love Witch.
Oh, I've heard of this.
I had not heard of this filmmaker. She's done a few movies now.
Oh. I've heard of the film.
And Bilmer or something like that?
I don't know.
Her other thing that was vaguely successful was a movie called Viva that was sort of about the sexual revolution in the 60s and 70s.
Okay.
And this, I don't know, I read an interview later, and so many things that I'm like, this is an homage to this. She's very big on, like, no, I didn't, this is not me parodying or satirizing anything, this is just the movie I wanted to make, which, you know, whatever. It looks, on the surface, an awful lot like a satire of, like, a 1960s, 1970s witchcraft exploitation film.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like.
She wrote, directed, edited, made the sets, made most of the costumes.
Really?
Yes. Huh. It was insanely low budget. Took a really long time to make. And it is that, although they never explicitly say the time period, and near the end, some shit happens that leads you to believe it's a totally different time period than what you thought it was.
I see.
Not that it's particularly interesting to the plot, it just that happens. But it has that vibe of that movie, but there's just weird... Okay, the one thing I'm very confident in saying about this is it has an undertone throughout the film of angry feminism, and I absolutely love that. Like, it really plays with different sides of sexual politics in just odd ways. Like, our main character seems to be very old school, like, you know, oh, you have to please your man and give him the fantasy he wants and stuff like that. But that's sort of not what's, like, it's very odd. Well, it's amazing to me because our main character is pretty much definitively insane and a serial killer, and you're absolutely rooting for her, and she's absolutely the hero of the film.
Okay.
And it really, it hits, I mean, it hits on issues of sort of traditional sexism in a way, and traditional sexism within relationships and within sex and sexual interaction and I don't want you to say bargaining or whatever, sexual discourse.
Sure.
It also manages through witchcraft, because that's the thing, she's a witch now. Her husband died, and she was heartbroken, and she met these people and got basically indoctrinated into Wicca.
Okay.
And now she's a witch, and she does magic and stuff like this. But you go back and you sort of visit the people that taught her, and there's weird tension there, and it really, the whole thing also seems to be sort of taking a shot at what I would say is sort of new ageism, and that sort of proto-feminism that was still sexist in its own special way. That sort of idea that, like, women and men are equal but they are different, and, you know, women's power is through their sexuality and stuff like that, and it, like, seems empowering but it's creepy and and there's that sort of vibe to it. It is absolutely filmed, and again, she claims not intentionally, she just filmed it the way she liked it, but it is filmed in a very 1960s, 1970s style. For people who like that aesthetic, it's just wonderful to watch to that end.
Okay.
It is absolutely a filmmaker's vision. Like, you can tell she made it exactly the way she wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it fascinating and really, really compelling, and I liked it. It is particularly good if you are in what I can't imagine is a large Venn diagram overlap, I don't know, but where I am, which is, you liked those movies of the 60s and 70s, the exploitation, witchcrafty kind of things and stuff like that, which I totally love those movies, and at the same time are a pretty serious feminist. Which, like I said, is a hard overlap.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I do understand those movies.
Not really.
Not so much.
Yeah, right.
But if you are in that camp, it's really cool. But I don't know. I feel like it's just so thought-provoking to me. And there absolutely, to me, are layers upon layers in the story. And there are definite times where it's overwrought, and it's clearly low budget. But just, you know, you can circumvent that with a lot of effort.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did. So the Love Witch, I if any of this sounds appealing to people or interesting, even go check it out. Yeah. It's here's an interesting aspect, I think, to it, and it wasn't mentioned that there's a lot of sex in it, so there's a fair amount of nudity in it. The main character gets naked several times. But things are always very strategically done that it's not explicit nudity.
Hmm.
Like, certain bits are always covered. And originally I was like, oh, because that actress said, I don't want to do that or whatever. But now I'm like, I can think of reasons why that might have been a symbolic or thematic thing specifically. Because it's not the tone of the movie. There's other people who are just out there naked. But she is never quite, even though she is the main focus and is very, like, sex is a big thing in the movie for her. And now I'm like, I feel like that might have been a very intentional decision, which I think is very cool, and I think speaks to things. But yeah, among other things, it's just a very serious, thoughtful filmmaker that put together something that was very much her vision. And I kind of think, regardless of the genre or content of the film, that's always an interesting thing to see, unless they're a really shitty filmmaker, and she was not at all.
Right.
To the degree that I'm going to look up her other films. She's only got one other major film. I think she has some short films, but I totally want to look more into what she's doing. It's very interesting. Just as a little offset for the moment, there's a movie that hasn't come out yet called Dave Made a Maze.
Okay.
Have you heard about this?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah. I had heard about it. Cracked periodically will do an article where they're like, hey, here's like 8 movies that are coming out that look incredible and nobody's talking about them. And in their most recent one, they had this. And apparently, they wanted to make a movie and they had no money. So they got a lot of cardboard and made a movie with cardboard.
Okay.
And the movie's all about, this guy makes a little maze in his house with cardboard, but it's like bigger on the inside and he gets lost in there and his friends have to go get him and stuff. And there's lots of cool effects, all cardboardy. Like there's creatures in there and stuff, and it looks very cool just visually. But I'm also really curious because I finally watched a full trailer of it and I don't recognize anybody in it except James Urbaniak, who I only coincidentally know what he looks like. He's primarily a voice actor. He's the guy who made and voices like half of Venture Brothers.
Oh.
But it's him just as a flesh and blood person. And I'm very intrigued by that as well, because he experiments a lot with art and stuff, so I find that interesting. So that looks very cool to me. I know somebody keeps getting messages. I think it's Trisha's phone is somewhere over here. I don't know where. But, yeah. So, what was your show?
Glow.
Oh, how was that? I've been incredibly curious.
It is really hard for me. Well, like I said, we started watching it and we didn't stop. We just binged it clear until like
you tell me
2 or 3 a.m.
For those not too familiar, Glow is Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. It was an incredibly short-lived female wrestling, what do you call them? League, I guess.
Yeah.
In the 80s.
In the 80s.
And
now,
it had its own little TV show and stuff.
Yeah.
And if you tell me you're making that TV show, I have an idea of what that's going to look like. But then you tell me it's being headed up by Alison Brie, and then I read interviews with her, and it sounds like it is not what I would have expected.
Well, yeah, if a person's looking for something that is a reasonably historically accurate representation of what happened then, that's not what you're going to get, I don't think.
And if you're looking for something that's that like what actually happened, is sort of exploitative and voyeuristic in a way, it sounds like they sort of eschewed that well, as
you
well.
You can't really avoid that aspect of it, but there's definitely...
more substance?
Yeah. Again, my wife ended up really liking it. I wasn't sure how to feel about it, and I'm still not. But
I have tremendous respect for Allison.
Oh, I do too.
In terms of her talent and in terms of her decision making, and the fact that she seems super proud of this, to me is a very good sign.
Well, I guess I'm really curious to know if you watch it, what you think of it. I'll reserve saying too much about it. But my wife really liked it, and you know, I thought it was fun. I guess I don't know if it weren't for my wife watching it, liking it, if I would have watched it.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't anything wrong with it per se. It just wasn't my thing necessarily. But watching it with her was fine and kind of fun. But she liked it.
I could see myself having an issue. Well, let me talk about this. Remember when we talked about the Black Panther trailer coming out?
Mm-hmm.
And me being slightly uncomfortable because I'm like, as a white man, I'm not sure if some of this is racist. I could see me watching that show and being like, is this... I can't tell. And which is silly, because oh my god, you know, it's not like other people get to decide for you, that kind of thing.
But
I do have that, like, I feel like, you know, as a white man, I really don't have that kind of authority. But
I think Alison Brie's character is very interesting, and of course the work she does in it is really good. I don't know, it's one of those things I'd like to, before I talk about it, I'd like to get someone else's view on it, because maybe that'll help me put into words how I feel about it. Because I don't think that, like I said, if it weren't for my wife, I'm not sure that I would even have tried watching it, or after watching the first couple, would have kept watching it. Not because it was bad, but because, this isn't my thing.
I'm super interested. Don't hold your breath. It'll go on the list of things I'm super interested in, of which... some of them have been going on for years, and I still have not.
Well, we saw it, so
yeah.
Now you can know that you can bring it up, and I'll know what you're talking about.
I'll probably have Bates Motel first, so.
That's a good plan. I'm drawing from the hat.
He's drawing from the hat. He's sick of talking to me about shit.
Whoops, I drew two things
from the hat. As he usually says, the Lord's work. And draw from the hat. Seriously, people, write in themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. What you got? Oh, yes. It's from coffee.
Coffee?
It is from coffee.
What is the greatest accomplishment of your life? Well, we're doing it right now.
This is it right here.
This is it.
That the thing earlier in the hardware store with the popcorn tubs, that was my greatest accomplishment.
greatest accomplishment.
By the way, I feel like I suddenly remembered. I said I was going to watch Spider-Man last weekend. We did not because it was Coffee's birthday.
Oh.
We went out to Cedar Ridge Winery and Distillery for her birthday. And it was hilarious because it was a great time. The food was terrible and expensive, which I think makes sense because they're operating on the principle that you're coming out here for alcohol and you're going to be drunk. But it was terrible. But the drinks were really good. I mean, I had a Diet Coke, but Trish had this honey lemonade bourbon thing that was really good. But then we went on the tour, and the tour is so damn fascinating. We basically were like, we were going to buy some other spirits or whatever, and we're like, screw that, we're buying a bottle of bourbon. Because the tour just made the bourbon sound so cool, because we got really into, like, how it works, and more into the definition of what constitute what kind of spirits, and why Iowa is pretty interesting in terms of aging the bourbon.
Why is that?
It has to do mostly with the inconsistency of the weather.
Oh.
That does some stuff. And got to see all the machines and stuff, and so it was just fascinating. And afterwards, I was like, yeah, let's get a bottle of bourbon. We haven't drunk any yet. We hardly ever drink any. I'm like, that'll last us, you know, 20 years. But, you know, spirits tend not to go bad, so. But consequently, because of that, we were like, our weekend's a little busy now. We'll save Spider-Man, so we're going to do Spider-Man, presumably, this coming weekend. I've heard, in general, good things.
Yeah, I've heard lots of good things about it.
All right, so, what's the greatest accomplishment of your life? Marrying my wife. 100%.
Is that an accomplishment?
Duh.
I mean, it's...
I got a woman of the caliber of my wife to agree to spend the rest of her life with me.
Okay, I guess. That seems like something...
I'm impressed when I can successfully keep a pet.
Okay.
And they mostly don't have thumbs. Mostly. No, I really do. Because it's something that took effort. I had to forge a lot of documents. No. But it's something that took effort and time and... Okay,
and that you could conceivably have screwed up?
My proudest accomplishment in my life is my marriage. Not necessarily the act of getting away.
Yeah, that sounds more
but my
appropriate
marriage,
for some reason.
Because I really like my marriage. It's not perfect. It would be weird if it was. Hold on. You talk about your greatest accomplishment. I'll be right back.
My greatest accomplishment.
It's getting too weird with the buzzing.
Yeah, there's a phone or something. I can swear it's... It sounds like it's behind me, but there's nowhere for it to be back there.
I keep thinking I hear it over here.
Oh, okay, well...
Hey, Trish?
Anyway, greatest accomplishment. See, here's the problem I have with this question is... I'm not done really trying to accomplish whatever I think the greatest thing is, or you know, I have certain things I want to achieve in my life, and those things are, in my mind, more important. And if I were to achieve them, they would be greater achievements, really, than anything before. So it's hard for me to even think of other achievements as being all that great by comparison, is what it comes down to.
Okay, Trish is asleep. And I checked my phone, and it has no messages, which means it's not somebody eagerly trying to get a hold of us because it's an emergency.
What is?
Probably her family. Her family does these...
Oh, they're talking to each other.
Go, go, go.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing it's that. Mostly, I just wanted to make sure it wasn't somebody being like, I'm stuck somewhere. Can you come get us? Because I had left my phone in the other room. But no, my phone has none of these texts. So.
There's also
Give
an issue.
Give me the cliff notes of what you said.
I was just saying that I think of things that I want to accomplish that I'm still working on accomplishing. And when I think of me accomplishing them, I think, well, that will be a great accomplishment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And anything I've accomplished in the past doesn't seem great compared to that thing, so I don't...
Because one's aspirational and one's, like, quantified, like, I did it.
It took a finite amount of effort. It's hard for me to think in terms of it being those other things being, quote-unquote, great, but that's another thing is I don't know how often when I'm trying to make something happen, and it does happen, how often I stop and note that I've achieved something, right? It's just, I just go on to the next thing and maybe forget all about how, because sometimes I'll be talking to someone about something in the past that I've done, and I'll remember something I did that I'd kind of forgotten I'd done. Mm-hmm. And I'll think to myself, wow, how did I do that? Because now, looking back, I can't even imagine me doing that, and it does seem kind of impressive to me now when it didn't seem like anything to me then.
I mean, there's genocide, and then there's genocide.
No. I can't even come up with a good example, but there are things that I'll be talking to someone and I'll say, oh yeah, I did that once and such and such and so, I forgot all about that. Wow, how did I even get involved in that thing? And once that I was involved in it, how did I do it? Because now if I try to imagine myself doing that, I don't even know how I'd get started. A lot of times, when I look back, though, I realize that the only way I got through some of those things was to not really know all the stakes that were involved, right? I didn't really understand what the consequences were going to be if I screwed up, and I didn't accidentally succeed, but if I'd been more aware of where I was at, what I was doing, I might have been too distracted by all of the possible disasters to actually succeed. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I definitely have had those experiences.
And
you hear that a lot. With a lot of like grassroots success stories.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I did it because I didn't realize that it was dumb
yeah.
and unlikely to do
right,
it.
Right,
and
right,
did it.
That's right, that's right. I mean, you know, I don't... So all of that stuff together makes it... When someone asks a question like this, what's your... Well, I don't... You know, there aren't a lot of things that I think of as particular accomplishments. And if I did, there aren't very many of them that I ever thought were particularly great. I have, you know, I did embark on the enterprise, if you will, of raising kids from infancy. Yes. Okay. And I would say that while there were many things about that journey that ended up not being very satisfying for me personally, you know, that was a that was something like a 20-year commitment, which I think was executed by myself and my wife together with, I mean, if I'm going to be perfectly objective about it, because I'm a person that's going to tend to want to see things as negative, right? Mm-hmm. And look at all the failures.
You're absolutely the worst.
But if I try to be objective about it and take in some of the feedback we've gotten from other people, including professional people and so on, it seems to me that my wife and I achieved a very high level of consistency over 20 years. And anything you can do over 20 years and achieve a high level of consistency is quite an accomplishment, I think.
The more time goes by, the more I'm like, if you can raise a kid, and by the time they've hit 20, neither they nor anyone else has died because of it, you did something amazing.
Well, I mean, it's...
And last I knew, nobody had murdered
anybody. No, nobody's murdered anybody, and everybody's still alive.
Well, it would be hilarious if now you're like, oh, did I not tell you? Oh, yeah. The middle one... killed like four people. Yeah, sorry. No. I thought I'd mentioned that. It was in all the papers.
It was, you know, at the time, over that period of time, it was just something that you did, right? You have these children, you love them unconditionally, and when you love, this kind of goes along with what you're saying about marriage, because I think that's why my marriage to my wife works, because we love each other unconditionally, and when you love someone unconditionally, you're prone to do certain things without even really thinking about it. To help them, to accept help from them, to cooperate together on certain things. So while you're in that situation, like with your spouse or with your children, with your family or whatever, it just seems like the natural thing to do. But when you look back on it, you know, you appreciate how nothing happens without energy being put into it, right? Emotional energy, intellectual energy. And to maintain something like that over a very, very long period of time, especially where some of those periods of time can be very stressful and very dramatic and traumatic, you know, that says something about the people who are able to do that. And so, you know, I guess I give myself a little credit for me and my wife for being able to do that. And if there's any such thing as a great accomplishment that I've had, there's that, just doing the job.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And doing it at a level that, you know, where I feel like we did a reasonably good job. I'm not a perfect job by any means, but at any moment in that 20 years, we could have quit. we could have had a nervous breakdown. We could have just said, I'm done with this and left. There's a lot of ways we could have clocked out and stopped doing the job, but we didn't do that. And, you know, I don't think we deserve some kind of medal or something. I mean, we were parents. That's what we're supposed to do. But I also don't think we should minimize how that there is some effort there.
No.
And there is some, and so there's an accomplishment to be noted there. And so I guess that's my answer, the best answer I can come up with.
I like that one. And I should say, like, I'm not committing now that my marriage is the greatest accomplishment I will ever have in my life. I could accomplish other things later. Now, if I'm a betting man, I feel like at the end that's still probably going to be
the main
accomplishment I think is greatest, but I am not... I don't discount the possibility of greater things later on. You know, I am such an ambitious overachiever.
Oh, yeah.
just a go-getter, you know.
Yep, that's you.
Yeah.
That's what everyone thinks. Who knows you?
Irons in the fire. I basically have a lot of irons in like an empty fire pit, don't I?
Yeah. That's
pretty much, because I do have a lot of irons.
Irons, yeah, but there's no fire.
But they are not getting heated, like, at all. I was like, irons in the pool. Like, I got a lot of irons in the pool.
In the pool.
Yeah.
Yep.
I got a lot of irons in...
At the bottom of the pool.
I got a lot of irons on layaway at and the store.
Sometimes it's even a pretty cold pool, really.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah.
Not
yeah.
even a very warm pool.
Very,
not a heated pool.
Very little molecular movements, honestly. It's cold on a Kelvin scale, but they are there. Oh my God, I don't think I told you, I didn't tell you this, because it just happened. So, my friend, who's the other guy who GMs our gaming group, and who's GMing right now, I had a brilliant idea that he and I could co-GM something, because now we have enough players.
Oh, okay.
That I'm like, we could do a thing where, like, we come up with something together, and either, like, we take turns GMing, and the other one does, like, significant NPCs, or, depending on how it plays out, maybe one person GMs, and the other one handles that stuff, or whatever.
Sure, sure.
But it could be really cool.
Yeah.
Now we'll have five additional players, so that would be good. So I told him. I prefaced it with a disclaimer, and I said, usually William gets my brilliant ideas, so he understands. You've never had one of these, so I should tell you up front. Like, number one, probably never happening. Number two, if it happens, probably years from now. So just up front, I'm telling you this because I don't want you to get too excited, because I've seen William. The peaks and troughs have gotten more flat as years have gone on, but they're still there. And in the beginning, when even I didn't know this was a thing, the peaks and troughs were very big.
Yeah, yeah.
William would get very excited and then just go home and just cry his eyes out when it was clear. Like, I thought when I clearly just bailed on Project Ulysses, I thought you were going to, like, never speak to me again.
No. Because
you were, like, so into that. You're like, but we could just, let's work some more. And I'm like, yeah, no.
I'm still into it.
Yeah, no. I don't know. The problem is, I think society is moving in such a way that it becomes, I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I agree with that.
It works as well,
yeah,
anymore.
It's the way we'll see. The way we were conceiving of it before might not be relevant.
Someday it'll be so out of date, we'll just tell you all about it on the podcast
yeah.
rather than do it. But that was, I wasn't even thinking, and then I'm like, wait, this isn't William. William's the one who gets my brilliant ideas. William knows what that means. I do not want Dan to get real excited, or even worse, start doing it and expect me to do work on it. Fuck that. No, I am the living embodiment of that idea they've discovered that if you tell somebody your idea, you're less likely to do it, because telling feels like an accomplishment.
Oh.
I am that. I'm the god of that.
Huh, I feel the opposite. I feel like as soon as I start talking about it to people, then I feel obligated to actually do something about it.
Which, honestly, I think is just evidence that for most humans, that's how it works, is that when you tell people the idea, they're less likely to go.
Oh, because it's different for me.
No,
not opposite for me. That's what...
That was the thing. I've lived this for decades, but I recently have read in a few places that apparently this is a thing.
Huh.
And it's just sort of the... Like, the part of your brain says you did something cool and creative, which is came up with this idea.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take a break now.
So you can take a break now, and you just never get back.
You already come. No, other people might come back to them, but I mean, that's the thing. And I'm, like I said, I'm just a living embodiment of that. I come up with ideas. Isn't that awesome? Great. All right, I'm going to go have a nap. Which means I should start some sort of agency. Wherein I just give people those ideas
yeah.
and they give me money.
Yeah.
Or at least a original story credit or something.
I guess.
As Dan O'Brien would say, get my beak wet. Dan O'Brien's becoming a close friend in my life, which is bad because I've never met him and I only know him through YouTube.
Do you know he's only 31?
Yeah, I hate everybody like that. Every time I watch fucking Mamrie Hart whining about how she's 30 now, I'm like, oh my God. That makes me so sad.
There's this...
The one I really can't cope with is Beyonce. Like, she's getting older now, but, like, she had done more than I could even conceive of doing. And one time they mentioned, like, the singer and actress, 24, and I was like, fuck off. I mean, she's older now. She's probably 30 by now, right? And I was like, oh my God. I have done nothing. And, like... orders of magnitude different. You can't see my accomplishments next to her. Like,
well, yeah, but, I mean, and, you know, these people are sort of famous.
Well, and it's awesome when they eventually flame out and ruin their lives. I'm like, see, that's why I didn't do it.
I said sort of. The sort of was for O'Brien, not for Beyonce. But anyway.
Beyonce is sort of famous.
Shut up.
A little bit.
But I've met a lot of people, young people who are like, there's this one young woman I've met, I won't say her name, but she's 25, and she's like brilliant, and she's done some things that are pretty impressive, and she's like, she's 100 times smarter than, I am now, much less about what I was in 25.
Married a Hearst?
Like a...
The Hearst?
Like William Randolph
Hearst? Yeah. He married one of them, who's also like 15 years younger than him.
You know, there's a William Randolph Hearst is sort of famous because of Citizen Kane. He's sort of famous for having a lot of junk.
Yeah.
A lot of junk, and
including Chris Hardwick.
There are photographs of a lot of pieces of his collection of junk. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I were doing genealogical research, and we found a piece that was sold to him by her great-great-great-grandfather.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a like a Navajo Indian blanket or something, because he dealt in that stuff. And you find there's a picture of it, and it said sold to William Randolph Hearst from, and this guy who's her great-great-grandfather.
24 beads.
No, I didn't say.
All right, we are over time. So, have you got any very quick last thing about this brilliant 25-year-old?
Just that I'm so impressed by her intelligence and her accomplishments and stuff. But 25, that's pretty good.
I choose not to be impressed.
I mean, she's like half my age, and she's done twice as many stuff.
Disappointed in myself.
Oh, why?
I don't know. It's just the aesthetic choice I went with.
Okay.
I don't consider them impressive. I consider them normal, and me just and below.
I guess that's one way to go, but yeah, I'm just impressed, I guess.
It's fun for me, because I get to hate on myself, which I love doing, and also sort of diminish their accomplishments in a way, too. I get to be like, no, that's normal. I mean, yeah, you can be prouder, you're better than me, but...
But you're like, not better than most people.
You just are most people.
Yeah.
You're average. I suck.
I'm better than you because I'm so good at sucking.
Well, yeah, no. Like, that's...
I'm so good at being awful.
Lifetime achievement award.
Yeah,
there,
I'm so good at being awful. That makes me better.
They call me the Flowbee. Because I suck
and
the only amount of work I'm willing to do is to poorly cut your hair. Maybe. If you give me a vacuum cleaner. All right. Write into the hat people, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com.
No, don't write into the hat people, write into us.
Yes.
I don't know who the hat people are.
Hat people is an alternate podcast. It sucks. Because it's just about hats, but it's audio, so you can't, like, it's not helpful.
The hat people.
Hat people, taste like hats, talk like people. Wait, weren't those just the characters from Lidsville?
I don't know.
The hat people.
I don't know.
Also, go see The Love Witch. I should specify, The Love Witch is spelled like W-I-T-C. It's not like love smushed between two pieces of bread. I was explaining last night to somebody, and they were like, the Love Witch. No, it's not. It's The Love Witch. So.
Just another name for mutton, lettuce, and tomato.
Yes.
The Love Witch. So perky.
When the love is nice and mean. Anyway, yeah, so write the blog and listen to more episodes, because, I mean, you can't put a price tag on this stuff, but no. If you could, it would be $0, and it is. And just remember, you're not special, you're just normal, we're shitty.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.